And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
Welcome, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. Yes, you have entered into the Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, the Apologetic Zone, I like to call it. And I'm your host, Gary Machuda, and we have a great show in store for you today. As always, we try to push the boundaries, you know, push a little bit outside the comfort zone, examine things from different angles. And today we're going to switch gears. This week we've been talking a lot. We talked about the Eucharist. We talked about all sorts of, you know, detailed information. We're going to take a big view of the whole idea of apologetics, dialogue, evangelism, and we're going to ask a very important question, namely, does doctrine divide? If we insist on doctrine, is that just by its very nature divisive? And is it bad to divide? Well, we have a new guest who's going to be coming into the dojo, although the last name will sound very familiar. You may not be familiar with him. His name is John Mark Grodi. Yes, John Mark Grodi, son of Marcus Grodi, who we just had in the dojo not too long ago. He's going to join us. He has some very interesting quotes from G.K. Chesterton. And I think it's a really good, refreshing view of this whole thing. You know, why is doctrine important? If it divides, then is division good? What does divide if it isn't doctrine? So we're going to check out that on the other side of the break. John Mark Grodi is going to come into the dojo. And as always, we have our critical thinking skills. Today's Finding the Fallacy, by the way, is the faulty generalization. And we're going to meet one of the early church fathers, who today is St. Andrew of Crete. So a lot of our Eastern Rite listeners are probably already familiar with St. Andrew. So we're going to look a little bit about him. He has a couple of really cool quotes from him as well. I want to give my shout-outs for those watching live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Thank you, Ricky. Nice. Very symmetrical emoji explosion on the YouTube feed. And again, yeah, welcome all those on YouTube. Welcome on Facebook. And welcome those listening live on radio from coast to coast around the world and through the magic of the internet. Yes, the dojo lights are on, Beth. And thank you so much for coming. Let's see, if you have any questions, maybe you have some thoughts on the subject of whether doctrines divide and the importance of doctrines, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That is 888-526-2151. Love to hear from you. And as always, I should mention the Dojo Mailbox. We're here to help you. We want to be your lifelines. And one way to do that is via email. In fact, in some ways, it's probably the best way. I know a lot of people, if you're like me, I almost never call live shows. Just by nature, I'm actually kind of a shy guy. If I'm going to have a dialogue, I would rather it be a formal debate rather than a discussion on the phone. So I'd rather send an email. So if you're like me, give us your thoughts via email. At questions at handsonapologetics.com. That is questions at handsonapologetics.com. And love to hear from you. In fact, we have a few emails in the dojo mailbox. And I think perhaps, we can't do it this week, but perhaps next week we might actually do a mail call here on the Hands-On Apologetics. Go to the dojo mailbox. So if you have anything you want to share, now's the time to send it to me. I do see all the emails and I do respond to every email, though not all of them, of course, make it on the show. But nevertheless, it is appreciated and you will get a response. So that's just part of the service that We try to engage here in the dojo because we're all on the same team and we're all fighting for the truth, who is Jesus Christ. So good stuff. Let's jump to our critical thinking skill, shall we? And every episode of Hands-On Apologetics, we talk about a finding of the fallacy. We take an informal fallacy or sometimes propaganda, depending on the day, and we just familiarize ourselves with them. And because fallacies are basically sloppy ways of arguing, it sounds like an argument. It may even be persuasive in a sense, but when push comes to shove, it really doesn't prove its point. So you need to be able to figure out whether, when somebody poses an argument, whether, you know, not only non-Catholic but Catholic argument, you need to think about it, whether all the dots connect. And so informal fallacies basically don't connect dots. And today's informal fallacy is the faulty generalization. What is the faulty generalization? Well, the name pretty much says it all. It's a conclusion about all or many instances of a phenomenon that has been reached on the basis of just one or just a few instances of phenomenon. It is an example of jumping to conclusions. That's probably the best way to put it. And the problem is that usually faulty generalizations occur because there's just not enough data. You're basing your conclusion on too small of a sample, and then you're generalizing it to apply to a whole stream of things. So, for example, we'll run into it today. You know, you have an abusive priest here, abusive priest there. People say, "Well, see, all Catholic priests are abusive." Well, basically, that's all you're basing it on, that's way too small of a sample. And you also have to figure in all the other, you know, the great priests that far, far outnumber it. So that's our finding the fallacy for today. It is the faulty generalization. And let's jump to meet the early church father. Let's meet St. Andrew of Crete. Hey, that actually rhymes, doesn't it? Wow. I guess the sensei should maybe apply for another belt. St. Andrew of Crete was born roughly around AD 66, died 740. He's a later early church father, as you can tell by those dates. St. Andrew of Crete is also known as Andrew of Jerusalem, and he's reckoned as one of the principal composers of hymns in the Eastern Church. He was born in Damascus and became a monk in Jerusalem at the Monastery of the Holy Sepulchre at the age of 14 or 15. And later he was ordained as a deacon at Constantinople in 685. And about this year, about the year 692 AD, he was made archbishop. Now, roughly around this time, the Monophysites were kind of growing in influence. Now, the Monothelites are a heresy in the early church which believed that Jesus only had one will. Okay. Now, the correct understanding is, since Jesus is fully God and fully man, Jesus has a divine will and he has a human will. Okay. Now, both of those wills are in concert with one another because Jesus never sins. He never did anything. He never willed anything that wasn't in accord with God's will, right? Because he's God. Well, the Monothelites believed, well, no, Jesus just basically had one will. And there was a synod of Monothelites in Constantinople right around the time, a little bit after when St. Andrew became archbishop in 712. And he actually subscribed to the Monothelite repudiation of the two wills. Although, when later in the Third Council or the Sixth Ecumenical Council of Constantinople in 680-681, that was done after it was defined in 680-681. In 713, perceiving his error, he retracted it, and he presented his retraction to the Archdeacon Agathon at Constantinople, a profession of faith. He made a profession of faith against Nestorianism, against monophilism or monophysism, that is known as that Christ only has one nature, and against monothelism, that Christ only had one will. And so he embraced the faith in fullness, repudiated these heresies, And in his later years, he engaged in the struggle against iconoclasm. That's this belief that we can't use religious icons or pictures in for religious purposes. And that, by the way, came from an emperor who was very influenced by Islam, known as Emperor Leo the Assyrian. So he stood up for images. Andrew, by the way, died July 4th, which is his anniversary of his death's coming up very quickly, 740. And among his literary remains are a substantial number of homilies and sermons. He's probably best known for his numerous metrical compositions in the nature of hymns. Now, that being said, I want to just read a couple, because he wrote a canon on the Nativity of the Blessed Mother. In just a few lines, he says something very interesting. Okay, so follow this, folks. Think Immaculate Conception as I'm reading. Okay, in Ode 4, he says, "Today, O Savior, you have given to pious and a fruitful offspring of your womb, your Immaculate Mother." Very interesting. Mary is Jesus' Immaculate Mother. And also in Ode number 5, he says, "O Virgin undefiled, undefiled is your birth." So again, you know, he sees Mary as immaculate, that is sinless, and undefiled is Mary's birth. Okay, now that certainly opens the door for the idea of Mary's sanctification at conception, namely what we call the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception. But certainly he's affirming that Mary was sinless. I mean, how else can you understand it? All right, so coming up on the break, Mark Grodi joins us. Talk about doctrine.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody, to Hands-On Apologetics. And it's great to be with you today. Yes, as we're trying to get a hold of our guest, we are. I was thinking it would be a great time to repeat a few things that are in the dojo mailbox that people have asked, and so I figured, why not make the best use of dojo time, right? And by doing that, some people have asked, Gary, I really would love to learn how to do apologetics, to be an apologist. Is there a book that I can get that will kind of give me the basics so that I can understand how to defend the faith? And boy, when I get questions like that, that's got to come up, you know, immediately on my radar screen, because I, as you know, love books. For those watching on live on YouTube or Facebook, you can see all the books behind me. Yes, there are a couple of great books. The first book I think I'd recommend is the one that started me off in apologetics, and that is Carl Keating's book, Catholicism and Fundamentalism. Carl Keating, you know, you've heard him on the show. He's the one that started, really, in a sense, was a pioneer in the apologetics movement. He's the founder of Catholic Answers, which is an apostolate, and that delves into apologetics. You can go to Catholic.com, but it's Catholicism and Fundamentalism that got me going, because it's a great introduction, not only to how to explain the faith, but also he introduces you into all these different anti-Catholic ministries, many of which, thanks be to God, are no longer here. Nevertheless, there are ministries out there, and you can understand how they operate, how they get their information. So in some ways, Catholicism and Fundamentalism is a little outdated, but I think it's got lots of great material that you can check out. So that would be my first recommend. The second recommend would be a book by Frank Sheed called Theology for Beginners. And this isn't necessarily a book specifically on apologetics, but okay, it is a great book that will show you how to understand theology. Okay, so it gives you the big picture, who God is, how do we know his attributes, where does Christian doctrine fit in, and there's no one out there that can explain Catholic doctrine as clearly as Frank Sheed. Frank Sheed, by the way, was the founder of the Catholic Evidence Guild in England, so he used to go out in Hyde Park and basically preach in front of strangers, get on a soapbox, and deliver apologetics messages to anyone who walked by. And what that did was it honed his skills so that he knew how to present Catholic doctrine crystal clear, and also in a way that would engage people. Because if you don't engage people walking by, yeah, they're just going to keep walking by. And so, you know, all of his books are very engaging and very clear, and that would definitely be. So Catholicism, Fundamentalism, number one. Number two, Theology for Beginners, Frank Sheed. Okay. Another great book that's probably, I would say, if you like Catholicism, Fundamentalism, you want something more updated with more arguments, Trent Horn put out a book, I think it was about a year or so ago, called The Case for Catholicism. And this is for Catholic apologetics, so it's arguing with Protestants. He goes through the whole spectrum of the major apologetic arguments between Catholics and Protestants. He updates it, and it also includes a lot of some of the more recent things that you will hear in debate, things like that. The beautiful thing about Trent Horn, and I really think this is his charism, is that he can take an extremely complex issue and just pick out the most important thing. So his writing is very pithy. If I wrote The Case for Catholicism, it'd probably be 3 or 4 volumes. No one would buy it, and even fewer people would read it. So that would be 0 minus more than 0, I guess. But what he does is he encapsulates it into a book. It's a great book. You got to get it. That definitely needs to be on your bookshelf. And, you know, let's see. I'll give you a couple more since we're still contacting our guest. Which one would be? Here's an interesting book. Now, for you folks who, this is good for beginners, but it's also good for those who are more advanced. In fact, if you don't have this and you consider yourself a defender of the faith, you need to pick it up, okay? And it's an older book, but it's one of those books that there's just nothing else out there like it. It's a book by a German theologian, Ludwig Ott, O-T-T, and the book is called Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. Okay. Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma, I believe it's still in print through Tan Books. I might be mistaken, but nevertheless, if you Google it, I'm sure you can find copies for sale. What is Fundamentals of of Catholic Dogma? Well, basically, what Ludwig Ott did, and he's a very good, solid Catholic theologian, is he turns theology into a giant outline. Okay, so if you like bullet points, you like subheadings, you like a very systematic expression of, you know, or exposition, this is the book for you. Because what he does is he breaks down the faith into major headings, and then after that he will take a specific topic. Under the topic, he'll give all the people or groups that opposed it. Then he'll give church documents that affirm it. He'll give scripture, and he'll give early church fathers. So it's kind of like an entire apologetics outline all rolled up to one. So that's my book recommends for beginners for apologetics. And even for the advanced, like I said, you got to have Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. Trust me, you would love this book. And without further ado, why don't we go to our guest. Our guest, by the way, is John Mark Groda. He's the chief operating officer of the Coming Home Network, and he's been working with Apostles in various capacities since 2005. He's been interviewed in EWTN programs like Life on the Rock, Journey Home, various other radio programs. He's a graduate of a student of philosophy from Franciscan University, Steubenville, he's an avid writer and contributor to the Coming Home Network website, which is chnetwork.org. And welcome to Hands-On Apologetics, John Mark.
Thanks, Gary. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. let's see. You know, lots of people think that doctrines are our enemy, that they are what divides us, that we're much better off just kind of sweeping differences under the rug, and we'll all hold hands and get together, you know, and everything comes alive. But you think otherwise. So why don't you give us an intro into, does doctrine divide?
Sure. Well, you know, I appreciate the invitation to join you, Gary. And I appreciate any opportunity to talk about G.K. Chesterton, to pull out some pithy quotes. And this was a perfect opportunity because one of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite books, the book is What's Wrong with the World. It's a shorter book. It's actually about the family as a whole. But there's a couple chapters at the beginning that I go back to time and time again for their clarity in helping us understand how we think and how we're to communicate with others. And the chapter title is The New Hypocrite, although I don't know if that bespeaks the content of the chapter very well. And there's a number of things in this chapter that are worth pulling out. But in particular, there's one quote that I'll start us off with. And he writes this. Some people do not like the word dogma. Fortunately, they are free, and there is an alternative for them. There are two things and two things only for the human mind, a dogma and a prejudice. The Middle Ages were a rational epoch, an age of doctrine. Our age, at its best, a poetical epoch, an age of prejudice. A doctrine is a definite point. A prejudice is a direction. And then I'm going to skip down a little bit to the real meaty part, which is his assertion, contrary to common sensibilities, that it is not merely true that a creed unites men. Nay, a difference of creed unites men, so long as it is a clear difference. A boundary unites. Many a magnanimous Muslim and a chivalrous crusader must have been nearer to each other because they were both dogmatists than any two homeless agnostics in a pew of Mr. Campbell's chapel. I say God is one, and I say God is one, but also three. That is the beginning of a good, quarrelsome, manly friendship. So it is not merely true that a creed unites. We know that a creed unites. If we're of similar belief, it's easy for us to form a clique and to get along quite well. But what about this assertion that a difference of creed unites men so long as it is a clear difference, a boundary? I think that's such an important point for the modern world, because as you alluded to, Gary, we have this assumption that, well, if we round off the edges, if we cut corners, if we water things down so that there's not many differences left, we'll get along a lot better with people.
Yeah,
but right. The opposite is the case. And that's kind of his whole point of this chapter, that in actual practice, what we find is that when our differences are muddy and vague, the practical result is that we stay far away from each other. And we make caricatures of one another, and we no longer have the ability to speak to each other. You know, but when my beliefs are concrete and definite, you know, X equals Y, and your beliefs are concrete and definite, and I can understand them, X equals Z, well, then we can argue about that quite fruitfully, you know, our reasons for believing one or the other. But it needs to be definite and concrete, and that's what a doctrine is. That's what a dogma is. It's a definite propositional belief about the universe. And to the degree that we have those, we can have fruitful dialogue. To the degree that we don't have those, we just have, well, what we have in our political discourse today.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I really like that, because, you know, Chesterton doesn't say doctrine will dispel any kind of arguing, right, or any contention.
Right.
Yeah. But what it does is it actually draws people closer, because at least you know where the other person stands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he writes a little earlier. Again, I can't ever hesitate to share some of his wisdom here. But indeed, the case is yet more curious than this. The one argument that used to be urged for our creedless vagueness was that at least it saved us from fanaticism. But it does not even do that. On the contrary, it creates and renews fanaticism with a force quite peculiar to itself. This is at once so strange and so true. Oh, and then he goes on to different stuff. But that's the point here, that there's this assumption that if we get away from strong, definite, concrete beliefs,
yeah,
that we'll remove this fanaticism, the stereotypical idea of someone who has strong beliefs that wants to force those down everyone else's throats. But we haven't gotten away from that. In fact, what we've got instead is people trying to ram a lot of very indefinite, vague beliefs down other people's throats, and there being the inability to have a productive debate about those.
Right.
I think so often apologists in the modern world of any sort, whether it's talking about the Catholic faith proper, you know, or about any other subject, you find yourself in a situation almost having.
John Mark, I hear the music coming up. We'll come up to a break. We'll talk with John Mark Rodi about doctrine. Stay tuned, everyone.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. We'll be right back.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody, to Hands-On Apologetics. We are chatting with John Mark Rodi. John Mark, I'm sorry about that. The music kind of snuck up on us. And I was just so enthralled by, you know, these quotes, and you were just unpacking some really great information. Actually, the quote you gave from Chesterton says that at least the Anglican Church, which I assume is what he's talking about, wishes to make things fuzzy, because if doctrine's fuzzy, then you won't have fanatics. But then Chesterton says that actually it's the opposite. When things are fuzzy, that's when people get fanatical,
right?
Because anything goes, right? Now, if you want to continue that point with apologetics.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting point that he unpacks throughout this chapter, this distinction he's making between a doctrine and a prejudice. And the way he characterizes a prejudice is rather than a definite point, a vague direction. And so he gives the example of one believing, someone saying, I believe God is one, and presumably a Christian saying, I believe God is one, but also three, you know, versus, you know, two people who simply believe in sort of, monism, you know, oneness versus multiplicity, a vague direction. We can see lots of examples of this in our public discourse today, you know, believing, you know, in social justice on one hand, or, traditional values on the other hand, not a definite point, but a vague direction, you know, bigger government or smaller government, just bigger or smaller is the qualification, rather than some definite thing that I believe in. And the problem with those two, a view that it is indefinite and it's a vague direction like that, is they can't actually interface.
Yeah.
Because they don't, it's not clear on what they actually disagree on. It's not until you have a definite point, again, a propositional point, I believe X is Y, that someone can say, okay, well, let's, what is X and what is Y? You know, you need, in a proof, you have to have your premises and your conclusion. And to argue with that person, you need to be able to argue about a premises or how the premises lead to a conclusion. But unless you have definite points of belief, you can't do that. And so, again, I think what I was saying as the music took us away was just that we often find ourselves as apologists in any area of life, any intellectual area, of almost needing to reteach people their own point of view so that we can have a productive argument with them. We're having to be very Socratic and ask, well, you say this, but what do you believe about X, Y, and Z? Like, we need some meat here. You know, before I can even tell clearly how and why and whether I disagree with you, I need to know clearly what you believe. And so we find ourselves in this position a lot of trying to clarify the doctrine of others, even get them to adhere to a doctrine, even if it's one that we fiercely disagree with, because once they have a belief, then we can have a dialogue about it.
Yeah, very good. Boy, there's so many experiences I could tie into this. For example, one thing is I had a pastor who was a fairly solid pastor who was okay with apologetics. This was back when apologetics was just getting off the ground in the early 90s. And I showed him some stuff that I'm doing, and he thought it was good, but he thought I shouldn't be using the word truth so much because that could be off-putting to people. Right. And that's that whole thing about, well, you know, the if we keep it fuzzy, then you won't be fanatical thing. Right. And on the other hand, and I'm sure you probably have tons of experience like this, is I have found that dialoguing with a non-Catholic or even an anti-Catholic, you know, someone who is incredibly opposed to Catholicism, once you draw out exactly what we believe and what they believe, it's we become best friends. You know, I have great relationships with people that are utterly opposed to a lot of the stuff I believe, because yeah. I know where they stand and why they stand there, and they know where I stand and why I stand here.
Yeah. Like many authors, you know, Chesterton has his nonfiction books where he outlines his principles, and then he has his fiction books where he plays these principles out in a funny scenario. Lewis had this with Abolition of Man and then his space trilogy. For Chesterton, I'd say the fun book that goes along with this one is called The Ball and the Cross. I'm not sure if you read that
one.
No,
I'm not familiar with that one.
It's this epic story of this Highland Scottish Catholic who comes down to town and sees the window of a lowland Scottish atheist and reads his article on the Blessed Virgin Mary. And basically, long story short, he breaks his window. They go to court. The atheist promised not to fight, and they leave the courtroom and basically says, you name the time and the place. And the whole rest of the book is these two dogmatists, these two men of fixed points of belief, spend the rest of the book trying to get away from the police long enough so they can fight their duel. But of course, in the process, as you alluded to earlier, they end up becoming best friends while the rest of the world is desperate to take them down, because having fixed points of belief so upsets the society of the time, because they're used to religious people of fuzzy, you know, compromising belief, and atheists who talk a big popular game but don't actually do anything about it. And so these two dogmatists, these two men of doctrine, they actually find themselves to be the best companions they have in that society. And of course, you know, I won't give away the ending of the book, but it's a pretty exciting book. But again, it's outlining this principle that, you know, men of doctrine, people who clarify their beliefs, are able to dialogue. You brought up truth. Yeah. You know, again, it's interesting. Even if someone is of vastly different doctrinal beliefs than me, you know, vastly, like not even religious, just like the whole worldview is just extremely different. If they still have a definite belief that they'll stand by and say, I think this is true, X is Y. Well, then what we've also found is a deeper commonality. Even though we're so far different from each other in belief, we still believe there is some truth to come to know. You know, and that's kind of the rock bottom thing. We either have to believe that there's some truth outside of ourselves that we come to know, or there's just no point in talking.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you will, you know, at least, you know, pick something you believe you want to stand by, and make it clear, make it concrete, then we can talk about that, because we're both committed to that truth that's ultimately bigger than both of us. I mean, that's another point here, too, to always keep in mind, that even though as a Catholic, I believe all that the church teaches, I believe it's true. I believe I believe Christ is who he said he was, and that's the church I need to be a part of. Still, I also have to recognize that truth out there is bigger than the truth I have in my head.
Yeah.
I have a pale image, a pale imitation of that truth in my head, and it always stands to be elucidated. And so I'm always looking for that in a conversation, even with somebody of very different belief, is that, you know, the more that I get into the nuance on this, the more I explain it, the more that I'm going to be patching holes in my own truth. So I'm never in a position to not expect that, as Hamlet said to Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth, not less. There are more things in heaven and earth than you've dreamt of in all your philosophies.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's my experience too. It isn't until you start sharing your faith that it really forces you to start looking closely at, okay, well, why do I believe that? And, yeah. You know, and this person has a good point, but, you know, how does that fit in? And then your faith grows stronger. It doesn't grow weaker. It actually grows stronger, because you have the incentive to learn more.
Yeah, especially as Catholics too, because there's no other system in the world, you know, religious or otherwise, that intellectually can account for as much as Catholicism can. That's why, you know, we often talk about the both ends of Catholicism. The reason why so many points of Catholic theology embrace a mystery and embrace a seeming apparent both and, it's not really a paradox, although Chesterton might quip it as much. In heaven, we'll see how the paradox is resolved between God's foreknowledge and man's free will, or God's justice and mercy. These mysteries that we receive from Scripture, we receive from Revelation, and we embrace, but we don't expect to be able to perfectly resolve, because they're beyond us. Catholicism, like no other system, is able to embrace those both ends where they come up, and not try to oversimplify the mystery, but accept the both and, accept the whole picture, and again, bit by bit, understand it more and more.
Yeah. So with your work at the Coming Home Network, I bet that, you already are talking to people who have sort of already made the journey.
Right.
It's not so much the beginning, but I you know, I'm kind of a junkie when it comes to stuff you guys produce. And that's kind of like the underlying thing is when people start looking into what does the church actually believe rather than what people say that we believe, that's usually a big door that opens up.
Yeah. People come to us at all stages. So the Coming Home Network, chnetwork.org, we're a network of people who have mostly from evangelical or other non-Catholic Christian backgrounds have become Catholic. And other people come to the network at all stages of the journey, whether they're just inquiring or whether they've already become intellectually convicted and convinced that the church is true, but now are trying to practically figure out how to make a change in their life.
Yeah.
But again, it's a great place to be in because more so than if I'm going out into the culture and talking to atheists or other people, in the case of most people come to us, we already have so much common ground. We're talking to baptized Christians who love Jesus. The only reason that they're coming to us is because they are so committed to their faith that they studied it and they followed the threads where they led them to realize there's more that Christ wants to give me. There's more that he asks of me than where I am now. So it's in the context of those conversations where we're able to, I think, as a organization, strike a good balance between, on the one hand, we proclaim the truth of the church, but we also recognize that we have a lot of common ground with these people, that the Holy Spirit is working in their lives and leading them. And we don't need to, as my dad likes to say, we don't need to push, pull, or prod anyone. We just need to prayerfully share and listen and ask questions and just help them along and let the Holy Spirit, take care of the timing.
Yeah, no, that's wise advice. And especially what's also beautiful about your ministry is that it's staffed mostly by converts and reverts. And, people who have been on the other side. So they kind of know what struggles people are going with when they start discovering truth of Catholicism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, our small staff are mostly converts, but even beyond that, our volunteers and our part-timers, and then, the people that attend our retreats or our one-day events or members of our online community, which can, be found through our website. Again, these are all people who've made this journey or are on this journey who are just sharing their stories. And the stories are big for us because, again, they're a great starting point for apologetics in the sense of this is what happened to me. This is how I work through this issue. How do you see it? And then we're able to dig slowly into those propositions, those doctrines. And so, it's a ministry of stories and of gentle discussion in apologetics. We enjoy it.
That's awesome. No, that's exciting. Exciting work. We're talking with John Mark Rodi about doctrine. Does doctrine develop? Or not develop, but does doctrine divide? And we're exploring the issue. So. Right back.
This is Terry Barber reminding you. There's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back to Hands-On Apologetics. We are chatting with John Mark Rodi about whether doctrine divides, what's doctrine, what's prejudice, what's good for dialogue, what's not. And we have a phone call. John from Kentucky, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Hey, Gary, it's very nice to talk to you again. Earlier in your show, you were talking about how to become a person who knows about apologetics. And I'm not going to say this just because John Mark is there, but I'm an absolute groupie when it comes to watching The Journey Home. And I think that's a really, really good place for people to go, because they learn the Protestant view of things. And it's helped me a lot. I've been relatively successful about bringing people into the Protestants into the Catholic Church. I live in Kentucky, for Pete's sakes. I have plenty of opportunity to witness to people. But I guess that's pretty much my my comment. It's an excellent place to send people. And I've used the television program before and recordings of it to get Protestants to look at it in their own time on YouTube and so on. Yeah. And so anyway, I just had to add that. I'm like a number one fan. I think I've seen every episode. So anyway.
Excellent. Well, thank you, John. Yeah, and not only I'm right there with you, John. I'm a big fan, but also what I do too, not only watch it live, but also the Coming Home Network website has access to like all the programs. Actually, John Mark, maybe you want to talk a little bit about the website.
Sure, yeah. The Coming Home Network's website is www.chnetwork.org. And we have, the archive of the Journey Home program, as well as hundreds of written stories and short video conversion stories. Stories are kind of our thing. And so we've got them on there. You can search them. You can filter them, you know, to find the ones that you're looking for. I think that was a really great comment. I just, the thought that came to mind, again, given what we talked about today, Gary, is one of the barriers then to authentic dialogue with other people is they're not understanding concretely what we believe and we not understanding what they believe. And so stories are such a great starting point, as I was saying earlier, because, we really look at the church through the eyes of someone on the outside of it. We see, where they came from, what they are passionate about. We see how different and odd the church might look like from their perspective. We see, what the potential barriers might be that they have to get over, and we're able to address those more poignantly, but also charitably. I think that's such an important point about this. I think another thing that I appreciate too, I've always appreciated, about my father's work and now being involved with it for the past 10 to 15 years. I can't remember exactly when I started now, is that, the people that come on the show, or they write their stories, or they share at one of our events, these are not people who are looking back at their Presbyterian background or their Baptist background in judgment, or with any sort of scorn or spite. They're looking back with gratitude for those people who gave them Jesus, who introduced them to truth, who set them off on this journey. Now, these people believe they've found the fullness, and so they want to share it, but they're looking back, again, as people that want to dialogue, that want to share, that want to invite rather than impose. And so, again, I think the stories, they just give us such a great example of sharing the faith. But myself too, I'm not technically a convert, unless you count coming in to church with my father at 5 makes me a convert. But I too have spent my life listening to the stories, and learning about the faith through the eyes of those people who are approaching them, working through the difficulties, and ultimately coming to embrace the Catholic Church.
Yeah, you're so like me. You're an invert.
Yeah. That's right.
John, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we lost John. Oh, I was going to ask. I thought he said that he actually shares videos from the show with non-Catholics.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's great, John. I'm glad you're doing
that. Yeah, but because, yeah, you're right. I mean, that really does fit in with the topic because I know from a Catholic perspective, because like you said, I was cradle Catholic like you, at least after the first 5 years of being
outside. I laid around the cradle for a long time, but yeah.
But, I don't understand everybody's position, and that hurts me too, because if you don't understand where people are coming from and how they view the church, you can talk right past them, right? Because it's like you have your view, they have your – that's kind of what Chesterton's saying. It's like prejudice is blind. You can talk past people in generalities, but unless you actually know the doctrine, you can't like zero in on, okay, where do we really stand?
Yeah, we were – so a couple weekends ago, Matt Swaim and I were out in Maryland, Emmitsburg, Maryland, at the Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton, because the Coming Home Network hosted a one-day event where converts and journeyers got together to discuss the journey of faith. And a gentleman there who had come to a previous retreat when he was a pastor getting ready to leave his ministry and is now in the church with his, married to his Catholic wife, and they're there with their infant, and they're talking about their ministry – He shared just a pithy little saying that I thought related to this, and it was people won't how does it go? People won't care. What is it? Oh shoot! I not quote it now. I guess I'm going to have to paraphrase. That. It's not coming to mind. But the point of the quote was that until people know that you care, they're not going to listen to what you have to say. They're not going to care about your criticism or about your. You know, part of the thing I think with the stories is that really making sure that we really do understand the other person's belief, and they know and they feel that we take it seriously. That's another thing.
People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
That's the one. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You got to start, by making sure not just that we intellectually understand each other's positions, but that we're coming from a place of sympathy. Like we are two seekers of truth here, and we're in a common project that is to expand our notion of to seek a greater truth and to have the holes filled that we have in our beliefs. And so, again, I think the stories help us to really be sympathetic to these people coming from different perspectives. We understand their passions. We understand what drove them. And so we're able to speak to those differences, those barriers, in a more intelligent and compassionate way.
Yeah, right. Because in apologetics, people think defending the faith means you have to speak and be articulate and, come up with these arguments. But actually, the most important thing I found in apologetics is listening first and understanding, where the person's coming from, what exactly is the difficulties. And then you could do the arguments. Then you can explicate, but it's really listening is key.
Could I share one more Chesterton gem with you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So he says later at the end of this chapter, genuine controversy, fair cut, and thrust before a common audience has become in our special epoch very rare. For the sincere controversialist is above all things a good listener. The really burning enthusiast never interrupts. He listens to the enemy's arguments as eagerly as a spy would listen to the enemy's arrangements. But if you attempt an actual argument with a modern paper of opposite politics, you will find that no medium is admitted between violence and evasion. You will have no answer except slanging or silence. So as he said, that's the person who's a true, as he says, controversialist, but in our case, the true truth seeker, the dogmatist, the person who really believes something and cares about the truth of things is going to also be the best listener because they want to hear. They want to know fully and completely what the other person believes. They want to know all the nuances. They want to know maybe things that they didn't know beforehand. They're expecting their own beliefs to be filled in and expanded and nuanced by the conversation. And so, again, they're above all a great listener because they want to know.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, that reminds me of a quote from Sir Arnold Lund, one of my favorite authors, where he says, controversy comes not from faith, but from doubt. And, it's easy for us to, it's usually the doubters that are the ones that get angry, that want to make things fuzzy, want to settle for the comfortable middle. But But then the real true controversies come. That's where the arguing and the fighting comes. But when you have faith, there's no arguments. You're seeking to understand, you know.
Yeah.
The intellect seeking understanding.
Yeah. And we all have faith. You know, even even a non-religious person, if you trust your own reason, if you trust, you know, that if X equals Y and Y equals Z, that X equals Z, if you trust that logic, you know, works, you're putting your faith in something that you can't explain. You don't know the origins of, you don't know where it came from. You don't know how, you don't know whether you can trust your own brain to compute it properly. You're putting your faith in something. You're putting your faith that there is a truth and that I, through my reason, can come to know some of it and I can seek more of it. So we're all putting our faith in something. And again, as you said, the person who puts their faith in that truth that they know that they have for now, they can build on that and they can interact with other people of faith in truth. But it takes that faith in something that you can build on into greater reason, you know, again, faith seeking understanding. We all have some base level of faith that's seeking greater understanding.
Right. Yeah. So in fact, I know sometimes people like to, you know, turn it into either or rather than both. And if Catholics don't share anything with the outside world, if we don't have things in common, then evangelism's impossible because there's no common ground that you can share the message of Christ with people, right?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like, and for me, I think the word Catholic has taken on new meaning over the course of my life as I've delved into Chesterton and others, and just realizing that part of what it means to be Catholic, to have a Catholic worldview, a Catholic doctrine, a Catholic set of beliefs, is that it's recognizing that in all things, you know, there's no compartmentalization of life. There's not like the religious side of life and then everything else. No, God made it all. He's in control of it all. It all came from him. It's been distorted in many ways, but it all came from him. So there's no person in which there isn't some admixture of truth and falsity. There's no system of belief that doesn't have some – there's nothing that someone came up with that wasn't coming out of some true desire, even if it's completely distorted and twisted. And so the Catholic above all else, you know, I think better than any other thinker in history, the Catholic is able to approach those things without not in fear, but in faith that it's all, you know, it all came from God, and things may be twisted, and we need to piece them, you know, take them apart and put them back together a little bit. But we're always able to embrace the good and build on it. And so,
yeah, very good. And that's basically what you do at the Coming Home Network.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe the hour has flown. Well, John Mark, what's the website again to get more information on the Coming Home Network?
chnetwork.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. God bless you.
Thank you. You too. John Mark Grodi, ladies and gentlemen, great stuff. And coming up tomorrow, we're going to have a convert, Troy Guy, coming to the dojo. He's going to talk about a great cloud of witnesses, why Catholic prayer chains are bigger. That's going to be a lot of fun. And also Friday, Master Apologist William Albrecht joins us. Coming up next, High Intensity Catholic Talk with the Terry and Jesse Show. And yeah, it's time to shut down the Midwest Command Center and turn off the lights here at the dojo. I want to thank everybody for listening. Appreciate it. And God willing, we will be back tomorrow to talk more about Catholic apologetics. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.